We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
Other than Joe Alt, which 2024 draft class Notre Dame player do you expect to have the best NFL career?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, it depends on who they get drafted by. I mean, isn't that kind of the thing we always talk about? Like, do they get drafted by a guy that fits what they're going to do? Are they going to get drafted by someone who, like, are they going to is Audric going to go to a team that views him as the, we got an older back that's got a year or two left, or are they just going to a team that just views him as nothing but third round insurance in case their guy goes, well, that's going to put him on a completely different trajectory. You know, is he going to play for a team that's going to, you know, build a system around him that, you know, allows him to play to his strengths? I mean, there's so many of those things that go into it. It's hard to answer that question when I don't know who the teams are going to play on. You know, my gut is Audric, but I think, you know, Cam's, the reason I say this, because can Cam consistently hold up over the course of a 16, 17 game season? That's really what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's it. It'd be those two guys. But if it was Blake Fisher, it wouldn't shock me. You know, if Blake's a better pro than he is a college player, that wouldn't shock me at all. I'm not betting on it. I'm not betting a McDonald's sandwich on it, much less my mortgage. But it's possible. He's got the talent, I think, to be that guy. But based on what I know of them right now, those would be my guys. And the other guy that I could see is, like, if you want to talk about longevity, is Marist. Because mm-hmm. I could see Marist being a 10-year David Bruton special teams pro bowler mm-hmm. in the NFL. I just don't see Marist being a starting linebacker. But I could see Marist having a really nice long career as a special teams guy that occasionally can, you know, help you as a pass rusher.
Yeah,
certainly see that in the NFL. Yeah. But as far as, like, starting potential, I'd go with Audric or Cam be my picks.
Yeah, I was thinking do you remember what your thoughts were about Aaron Banks when he was leaving Notre Dame?
Yes, a very talented player that was pretty good in college, but needs to be more consistent and a little bit more mature. Like, he was way, way better than Blake. It, similar conversation, but he was a way better player than Blake was. I mean, Aaron was an All-American in 2020. But similar thing where his best days might be ahead of him.
Right. Right.
Than Blake, but he was just better than what Blake was coming out. But yeah, I mean, similar type of deal. As Blake is like, I think Aaron, if he goes right, that's why, but that's why Aaron was a second round pick, because his film was so much better than Blake's. He was inconsistent. And Aaron was also like 330. You know, he was a lot bigger than Blake was too, but Blake's got all the tools to be that guy. I mean, I'm rooting for him, cause I do think he's a good kid. I do. He's just young and, you know, like all, you know, that's why Harry Hiestand believes in, you should stay to your fourth year. That's right. You should be a 3 year star. I mean, that's, he believes that strongly. Joe was a three-year starter. Blake was not. Blake only started two games as a freshman. He needed another year. I'm sorry, he just did. But with him not doing that, I still hope that he pans out, because I have no ill feelings on him. I think Blake made the wrong decision. I have no ill feelings on him whatsoever. I don't like how he necessarily left him, but that's all like little minor, I would have done it this way. I look back at things I did at that age. I'm like, yeah, I wish I would have done it a little bit differently.
Yeah,
but I root for the kid, because he's, and I'll be honest, I don't root for every Notre Dame kid to go to the NFL and have success, because there's some kids that I'm like, I don't really care for that kid very much, to be honest with you. And if you knew what I knew, you wouldn't care for him much either.
Yeah.
If you knew what I knew about Blake, you'd be like, he's a young kid that maybe sometimes makes some immature decisions, but you know what? He's a good kid. Mm-hmm. He was raised right, and he's got a big heart. You know what I mean? And yeah, he makes some 18, 19, 21-year-old immaturity of maybe he had a few too many beers at this thing, and I don't like that. And but it's like, those are the type of things you hear about, maybe about, but like, you also hear, man, there's nobody that was more willing to answer the call when they needed someone to go speak to some kids in the community. And you see that big teddy bear side of Blake, and you're like, this is a good kid. He just needs to keep growing up and keep improving as a player and all that kind of stuff. So that's why he is one of those kids that I root for, and that he ends up, the light does go on, and he can, you know, make that life-changing money as an NFL football player, which is going to come on contract two, not contract one.
Oh, by the way, I forgot to tell you this. I had a couple of writers that came up from Chicago that said, yo, I was looking for pro day previews, and you guys saved us on the drive up. Cool. The show we did the day before. They were trying to. They were trying to find out about Joe on Blake Fisher. Mm-hmm. And nice. They said, yo, we watched the show and you guys saved us. Nice. So now we came into this ready to like see what they were all about. I was like, that fit the conversation. Right. Right.
Happy to help.
I was like, I'll let Brian know. He'll be happy to hear that.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into some serious cash. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. We are the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2-6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You heard it. 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. It is so easy to use. All you have to do is download the app in the App Store or Google Play Store, sign up, add some funds, and you're in. Then you just find your favorite player and decide more or less on the suggested stat. It really is that easy. The night I joined, I picked Hannah Hidalgo to have more than 14 points, Maddie Westbeld to have less than 10 rebounds, and Marcus Burton to have more than 18 points. And guess what? I hit on all three. Bing, bang, boom, baby. Money in my pocket. It was just that easy. Download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
Why didn't the Notre Dame basketball team, make Brian Dutcher an offer he couldn't refuse? He makes $2 million in San Diego, high cost of living. He has San Diego State back in the Sweet 16 again. Why would Brian Dutcher leave San Diego State to come to Notre Dame?
That's kind of my response, Sean. He's been there since 1999.
Yeah.
I mean,
the Notre Dame basketball program is not on the men's side.
Looking at it from that standpoint, it would make no sense for Brian Dutcher to leave. First of all, number two, have you ever been to San Diego?
Man.
I you know my stance on going to California, Sean. It's about the same one about going to New York, right? But if I ever had to go to California, that's where I mean, my wife from there, you know, she grew up there. But, like, I'm not a huge fan. Like, I really we went to San Francisco and back in 2010, loved it. We went back again in 2017. I'm never going back, right? It's changed so much. LA, last time I was there, it was terrible. San Diego's still great.
And you know what I love? I love guys like Brian Dutcher. You know why? He reminds me of Mark Few. See, loyal. Dan Munson really is the one that started that Gonzaga thing.
Yeah.
You really think about it. He should have stayed. Right. He should have stayed. Mark Few has had several overtures from big time programs to leave Gonzaga, and he's decided to stay because he's comfortable there.
Michigan didn't want Mark. If Mark Few wanted to come to Michigan, you're telling me he wouldn't have been there higher.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Louisville. If he would have picked up the call and said, "Hey, I'd like this job," he'd be everybody's number one candidate. But to your point, some guys understand. I got it pretty good here.
Man, that's it.
You know.
It's not for everybody. It's not about money and going this program. Mark Few, he's comfortable at Gonzaga. And it's going to mean more for him to win it at Gonzaga.
Right.
And going somewhere else and winning it. My question would be, what is it about Notre Dame that would entice Brian Dutcher to leave?
The flip side of that, Sean, let's not forget Brian Dutcher's 64 years old.
Yeah, that's true too.
Right? Like, Micah Shrewsbury's 47.
That's a good point because Notre Dame's hires have been younger.
Yeah, and Mike is actually the oldest of all of them by far. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's 47 years old. But, you know, he's an Indiana guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's coached in Indiana throughout. He's from Indianapolis. He played high school, college ball in Indiana. He coached at Wabash. He coached at DePaul. He was a head coach at IU South Bend. He's coached at Butler. He's coached at Purdue. The only time he hasn't coached in Indiana was his time with the Boston Celtics and then his 2 years as the head coach at Penn State. That's it. Mm-hmm. His entire life has been in Indiana. You need that presence in Indiana more. That's something that they didn't do a good enough job, in my opinion, was getting some of those kids that they could have maybe got and then develop them. But, you know, you're getting a younger coach. You're getting a guy to me that fits what you're trying to build a little more.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I don't know that Brian Dutcher is a guy that as good of a job as he's done, and he's done multiple good years. I mean, people forget, Sean, the year that they canceled the season because of COVID. They were 30-2.
Mm-hmm.
San Diego State was that year. Like, he might have another Final Four team under his belt. But
let me, and something else,
Notre Dame.
No, let me ask you a question. If you were the AD, how would this play into your mindset? Micah Shrewsbury went to Penn State, took a fledgling program, and built it to where it was. Where Penn State is now, and where the new coach took over, Shrewsbury got it to that point. Steve Fisher was the one that revitalized San Diego State, not Brian Dutcher.
Right. Well, caveat of Brian Dutcher was his ace assistant the entire time.
Oh, fact.
Right. Facts. But yes, Steve Fisher was the head basketball coach on
that. Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's why I said, as an AD, if you're looking at those two things, I don't know. I mean, it's just something I'm just throwing out.
No,
there.
I mean,
again, I wouldn't be mad if Brian Dutcher would have been the hire.
No.
I'm and just trying to convince me.
This is the guy that was the ace recruiter for the Fab Five.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them, you know, because people forget the second Fab Five that ended up not being as good. The Maurice Taylor, Maceo Baston, Willie Mitchell, Gerard Ward, Fab Five 2, if you remember that group, Travis Conlon. But here's what it would factor into me. That wouldn't matter. It wouldn't be my number one factor.
Mm-hmm.
Micah Shrewsbury's background would be more of a factor. He's got the NBA he can sell to kids. He's the in-state. Mm-hmm. He's the Indiana guy. He understands that. He came up through the lower ranks, so he's had to show about the development and the scheme and stuff like that. I think Brian Dutcher's a very good basketball coach, but I think Brian Dutcher's also proven himself to be maximized recruiting efforts at a place like that. He fits what they do out there. I'd have been perfectly fine with Brian Dutcher being that guy. But that part of it would have been in my top 5 to 10 reasons. But age difference, the fact that Micah – I mean, look, guys, Micah demanded a pretty big salary, too, to get him to leave Penn State. But the fact he's an Indiana guy and his unique pedigree, to me, fits Notre Dame better. Brian Dutcher's a far more established and proven basketball coach.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
I mean, recruiter.
And with – Brian Dutcher's never done it as a head coach, but he was part of the turnaround at Michigan. Remember, Steve, they kind of were in a unique situation, Brian Dutcher, because he was, like you said, he was part of that building up the Fab Five. But he came to Michigan the year after they won a national championship. So he wasn't part of that national championship team at Michigan. He came the next
year.
He basically replaced Steve Fisher. Because remember, Steve Fisher was Bill Frieder's top assistant at Michigan. When Frieder left, Steve was the interim coach that during the tournament run. And then when Steve got the head job, he had to replace himself as an assistant.
Oh, yeah.
Brian Dutcher came.
Yeah.
So they weren't that good. The next year's team was pretty good. Went to the Sweet 16 and lost to Loyola Marymount.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, they were pretty bad. And they had to rebuild that team. And then they kind of took over a San Diego State team that was good, but wasn't like you said, Steve Fisher really built it. But it's just the way to rebuild that is going to be so different than the way you'd need to rebuild Notre Dame.
Thank you. I'm glad you said it.
California, there's so much more talent ready available to you. It's just such a different situation. And with him also being 17 years older, like, guys, because of Micah Shrewsbury's background, it is much more common for basketball coaches to be somewhere their entire careers than it is for football coaches for two reasons. Number one is just what we see. It's like there's always that Bama that's going to offer way more money. You're not seeing that in basketball outside of a couple jobs maybe. But you don't see as much of the – you got to be a legend or a unique guy like a Billy Donovan. There's been some guys, Lon Kruger, that have made that jump to the NBA, but most don't, and they're not successful. Tim Floyd, there's been some guys. Most aren't successful. But basketball is one where you'll see guys be at Gonzaga forever and be at places forever. And so
coach from Oakland.
Greg Campy,
right. 40 years.
His first trip to the NCAA tournament.
That's crazy. 40 years?
Right. But right, exactly. And again, Sean, this isn't like that team that Oakland had where they've never had this kind of team. He's never had opportunities to, you know, go like they've been, I mean, 2016 and 17, they went 25-9. The year before that, they were 23-12. They had back-to-back years in the 2009 and 2010 where they made the NCAA. Like, he's had teams before that have been to the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a matter of fact, in those 40 years, he's been to the NCAA tournament about 10 or 12 times, right? That, you know, they've been to the semifinals of the CIT. The point is the guy's had success there. This isn't like, oh my God, where'd this come from, right?
Mm-hmm.
He could have left if he wanted to, but in Micah Shrewsbury, because of the fact this is an Indiana guy, you have a much greater chance of this guy being here for the long haul. Because I do also think Micah Shrewsbury is a college guy. I know he spent some time in the NBA, but that was because he followed Brad Stevens there.
Stevens to the, yeah.
Celtics. And as soon as he left there, where did he do? He went right back to college.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a greater chance of him being here for 15, 20 years. Brian Dutcher's got about 5 or 6 more years left before he's 70 and kind of close to retirement. You know what I mean? So that's another – that would have been a bigger factor for me than – But what you brought up was a legitimate point of, can this rebuild be, even if you do credit, because I do think Brian Dutcher deserves credit for the rebuild, because he's the guy. Steve Fitcher wasn't recruiting those guys. It was Brian Dutcher was the primary recruiter for those guys, right, to build that team up. It's just such a different animal. Like, it's like saying, well, this guy turned UCLA around. Well, okay. This guy turned Alabama football around, or, you know, Ohio State football. Well, you should have. It's not exactly like incredibly hard to win there. You know what I mean? Like, turning Notre Dame around is just the way you're going to do it's going to be so different, just from a talent acquisition standpoint.
And I don't know if people will understand. I was trying to stop from going this direction. He doesn't fit Notre Dame, not as a person, because I don't know him. I don't know him. But just look at his track record of the kids he recruits. And some of the methods that he uses to recruit. You can go back. I can tell you now that Juwan Howard recruitment was not clean.
None of them were, but that's just kind of what you had to do to
and his win. His strength are the Kawhi Leonards of the world, the kids that are overlooked, the junior college route. That's right. Been his strength.
That's more of what I care about than the not being
coming clean. To Notre Dame is a totally different animal from the kids that you recruit, that you have been used to recruiting and bringing into your program and believing in. That's totally different. That's something for me that I think Brian Dutcher in his mind would say, I don't know if that's the right fit for me.
Right.
Whether or not Notre Dame's a great school or Mike Bray. I mean, he took San Diego State further than Mike Bray took Notre Dame. So,
well, I want to say something else. A couple of things that were said in the chat. He says he's maxed out his career at San Diego State. No, he hasn't. With all due respect, you got a better shot at winning the next 5 years at San Diego State than you guys. You're San Diego. Like, stop. Here's the problem that some people have. It's like this debate about if the ACC goes away, Notre Dame's going to be forced to join the Big Ten. And, like, guys, you keep looking at everything from a football lens. It's not the Big Two in basketball.
Mm-hmm.
The Big East is still a really good conference in basketball. The ACC is still a really good conference in basketball. The Mountain West is still a really good conference in basketball. You can absolutely go, guys, Gonzaga's won a national championship in recent seasons. You know what I mean? Like, you can win. I would argue it's actually probably a little easier path to win at San Diego State than it is at Notre Dame, to be completely honest with you. So, no, I completely disagree with the notion that he's maxed out his career at San Diego State. And if he has, then he's probably not a good enough basketball coach to get you there. I don't think he's maxed out his career at all, to be honest. And he's about to go. He's in the Sweet 16 again, you know? So I don't agree with that. And I think and people talk about age doesn't matter as much. He says, look what John Larrañaga has been at Miami for a while. Right. And again, I'm not saying old guys can't coach. I'm saying if you're looking to hire a guy to be here as long as Mike Bray was here, you're not hiring a guy that's 64. If you're trying to make a run, like if I'm Michigan and I want to get back to rebuilding and get back on track, I would consider bringing John Beilein back instead of Dusty May. I would have maybe considered Brian Dutcher. That would have never happened because of all the stuff that went down. Like, Brian Dutcher was never going to go back to Michigan. It wasn't possible. Mm-hmm. I'm just making a point. Because you have a window where you can win quick there if you choose to. It's not how Notre Dame operates. So, it's not that old guys can't coach. You're not going to bring that guy to Notre Dame and expect him to be here for 15 years. Micah Shrewsbury could conceivably be here for the next 20 years. In 10 years, Brian Dutcher is going to be 74. It's just a different animal. So, and that includes some of the other things, Sean. I mean, he's been at programs where the way that you recruit, and I don't fault them for it because that's how you want. Because like Juwan Howard will tell you, let's say Juwan did get some stuff under the table like every other five-star kid back then. But you know what Juwan will always say was the thing that mattered most to him is the day he committed to Michigan. You know, his grandmother passed away and the way that the coaches treated him, like they had to recruit him. It wasn't just because they offered him the most money.
Absolutely.
Right. And so he can acquire talent, but it's a completely different type of.
He was the first commit out of the five, right?
That's right. He was there. Yeah. And they've always said getting Juwan first is the thing. And it was a building. And then you got Jimmy and Ray next. And then Jalen was the key to making it the five.
Mm-hmm.
Like, cause you couldn't get Chris without Jalen.
Right.
Right. So, Fisher and Dutcher were totally exonerated. Andrew Gilmore, buddy, you're young. I understand that. We lived it. Okay. Trust me. They did things they needed to do to get those guys in. You're talking about what got Michigan in trouble was not what they did recruiting those players. The stuff with the boosters is what happened while they were there. So again, you're talking about something that you weren't alive for. So just once, Andrew, I'd ask you to actually trust us on something. We're talking about what they did to recruit those players. Chris Weber did not get in trouble and banned because of what he did in taking money in recruiting. He got in trouble because of the money he took while he was at Michigan from Ed Martin. That's the difference. The stuff with Mo Taylor and Lewis Bullock and Robert Traylor and Albert White, that was all stuff that happened while they were there. That's what got him in trouble. Remember, it was the car accident with Mateen Cleaves when he was a visit and all that stuff. All the stuff with him was that. So you can continue, and he's not going to listen to us. He's still going to act like he knows more than people who are actually alive when that happened. It is what it is. But I'm trying to tell you, we're talking about two different things, okay? We're talking about what was done to recruit them there. You can't recruit at Michigan the way you recruit at Notre Dame. John Beilein wouldn't recruit at Notre Dame the way John Beilein would have no chance of getting a recruiting class of Mitch McGarry, Glenn Robinson, and those guys, and Nick Stauskas at Notre Dame. What happened? Couldn't happen. There's no way. Could he have got Trey Burke? Yeah. Could he have got Mitch McGarry? No way. There's no way he was going to get Mitch McGarry at Notre Dame. No way. No way. It's just different. And so you can ignore what we're telling you, but I'm just telling you this is not football. This is basketball. UConn just won a national championship. They've won how many in the last 15 years with three different head coaches, right? Going to Notre Dame does not improve Brian Dutcher's chances of winning a championship. They don't. I'm sorry. How many championships has San Diego State won in basketball, Sean, in their history? How many chances have they won? How many championships have they won? How many championships have they won?
I don't know of any. Of course,
the answer is none. How many has Notre Dame won?
None.
Same number. None. Right? I mean, you know, so how does being at Notre Dame give Brian Dutcher a better chance to compete for a championship? Notre Dame, do you know how many Final Fours has San Diego State been in, Sean?
I think they're going to the Final Four this year.
How many have they been so far?
One.
How many has Notre Dame been in? One.
That's it.
One is the year I was born.
Yeah.
Actually, it was before I was born because it was 1978, which meant it would have been March, April of 1978, which means I wasn't even born yet. I'm 45 years old. Being at Notre Dame does not improve your chances of winning a championship over San Diego State. It just doesn't. Not in men's basketball. Maybe women's certainly women's basketball, but this is men's basketball. Right? It's a different standard. So
I mean, and I understand like the whole brand recognition and
yeah.
How look, because I don't want to say this. I'm trying to be careful how I convey this. Women's basketball is much more of a fit to Notre Dame,
yes,
than men's college basketball.
You're going to get five stars to the women's game. You're not getting five stars to the men's game.
Yes, because most five-star, and I don't want to say this because this could be a blanket statement to be taken the wrong way. Your average five-star is probably more than likely a good student the majority most. Of the time.
Good enough to get into places like Michigan and San Diego State, certainly.
You know, I'm just saying on the women's side, you know, most of the girls, that's been our point. Most
because the education girls, is still important because you're not going to go to the WNBA and make life-changing money.
There you go.
So your degree is still the most important long-term impactful thing that you're going to make in your life.
Absolutely.
In women's basketball.
Absolutely, which opens the door.
Jack Young leaving as a junior was shocking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, we're debating if Caitlin Clark's going to come back for a fifth year. Like, the greatest scorer to ever play in women's basketball, in men's basketball, we're debating, is she going to come back as a sophomore? It's a different animal. Now, NIL is going to keep some guys there, but, like, here's the thing. Andrew said that San Diego State doesn't have the NIL money to compete for championships. Neither does Notre Dame, not in basketball.
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to happen. Five-star players are not going to start coming to Notre Dame and staying for 4 or 5 years, 2 years, 3 years. It's just not going to happen. You may occasionally get that one guy, but it's like I said, John Beilein is about as good of a developer as I've seen of a guy that could have won at a place like Notre Dame. And the players he got that helped lead them to championships, he's not getting to Notre Dame. He's not getting Mitch McGarry at Notre Dame. Just, it's not happening. So it's just a different animal.
It is.
Different it animal. Is. And I don't think leaving San Diego State is going to make it any better. Got another one from Andrew Gilmore. Thank you, Andrew.
2021 schedule allowed Indy to win 11 games despite not being able to protect the quarterback. This is blasphemy, but 2021 is also a great coaching job.
Strongly disagree with that.
You go ahead.
I mean, name me one game where you're like, wow, what a great coaching job. If anything, coaching had kept them in games. Like, they should have blown Florida State out, took the foot off the gas before it was over. You needed a fourth quarter comeback to freaking beat Toledo, right? I mean, you struggled to put USC away, who was mediocre. You struggled to put North Carolina away, who was mediocre. You needed a comeback to beat a Virginia Tech team that wasn't very good. Like, that was a year where Notre Dame, and you played one good team that year, one good team, and they kicked your butt. And if it wasn't for Isaiah Foskey forcing a fumble, they might have lost that game by 30. They played like crap against Wisconsin until Chris Tyree's touchdown. The defense kept them in that game. The offense was crap that game.
Mm-hmm.
And they were losing in the fourth quarter until Chris Tyree's touchdown sparked them. And that was a very mediocre Wisconsin football team, if we're going to be honest about it. So it's like, what was the win that made you say, wow, what a great coaching job that team did? Like, I don't get it. I don't. What was great? Like, what was great about that team?
That you loads know, I think there's loads background. There's background to what Andrew is saying. Andrew has a big concern about the offensive line this season. If I'm not mistaken, he said that's his major concern. And sure. That's why you need Riley Leonard running around and having this capability.
Yeah.
And we know everything from, the transfer that they had at right guard that they do. Let the youngsters play, right? Mm-hmm. But see, here's the caveat. You can point to that 21 season. Brian, we both know the drop-off in talent from the top guys on the offensive line to what was behind them and the lack of depth that the offensive line was at that point.
In 21?
Yes. The fact that they had to go get Kane Madden.
Well, that's the thing. I didn't think they did have to do
that. I didn't think they did either. They
chose to go with.
But the fact they went and chose that, here's my thing. You can have concerns about every position. Heck, I have concerns that why, even though I've seen the practices, I still have concerns with wide receiver because I need to see it.
Mm-hmm.
We can sit up here and talk about Bo Collins and Chris Mitchell all we want to. I need to see it.
You need to see it in a Notre Dame uniform. And
that's my point.
Like they've done it.
Right.
We've seen Chris Mitchell go on the road and have a six catch 157 yard game against an SEC team.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen Bo Collins at the Power Five level have 100 yard games. I mean, there's always quite, you always got to show it.
Yeah. This is my thing with Notre Dame and offensive line. Dude, what position has a better resume when it comes to development and talent?
Right.
Than offensive line in Notre Dame. Like, so, right. Yes, concerns, I'm not worried. It's a difference between having a concern and being like, oh, man, I'm really worried. I'm not, because I know there's talent in the offensive line room. Do you have questions? I think the combination of Joe Rudolph and Jared Parker versus Joe Rudolph and Mike Denbrock, in my opinion, is a totally different combination.
I'm not worried about the coaching part of it. I'm worried about the experience part of it. That's my only concern about this team is the lack of experience. Because I do think it's been proven that that matters at that position more than any other quarterback to a degree. But offensive line is the position where experience is most important, and they don't have that. Pat Coogan's their most experienced returning offensive lineman with 13 starts. Like that – can this unit, which hasn't really played together a ton, be consistent enough for them to go out and not stub their toe a couple times to knock them out of the playoff? That's my question. I kind of feel like by the time they get to the postseason, they're going to be pretty good.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
One thing Andrew said, he says nearly losing is still winning. A win is a win. In the record book, sure. But we're having a conversation about the job the coaching staff did.
Mm-hmm.
And winning is not winning. So, like, are you going to say, hey, Nick Saban, great job barely beating South Florida because winning is winning? No, you're not going to say that. Like, you didn't play well. The question is did that coaching staff, like, 2020 was arguably the best coaching job Brian Kelly ever did. Like,
I'll give you that.
When you consider they had no off season mm-hmm. because of COVID.
Yep.
They had their season just abruptly stopped, like right in the middle because of a COVID outbreak.
Mm-hmm.
You got games getting canceled. You don't have this guy because he tested. You don't have that guy because he tested. You're limited at skill at this position. You're limited at talent at that position. You're limited at depth in a lot of places. You lost some really good players. I mean, think about who they lost from that 19 team. Just on defense alone, Aguara, Khalid Kareem, you lost Troy Pride, you lost Alohi Gilman, you lost Jalen Elliott. Like, that team had some ugly wins that year, but you're like, dude, mm-hmm. that team shouldn't have won some of the games they won that year or shouldn't have been as impressive that year. But when I watch a team in 21 that has Kyren Williams, Kevin Austin, Michael Mayer, Isaiah Foskey, Kyle Hamilton, Cam Hart, and you go down the list and you're like, that team barely beat Toledo. Like, this is what I say. The standard, Brian Kelly lowered the standard among some younger Notre Dame fans. Do you think Alabama fans would have been like, hey, I know they needed a comeback to beat Toledo, but they won? No, they'd be like, what the is going on right now?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like the Wisconsin game, I'm good with. That was a 9-4 Wisconsin team. I mean, you should have played better, but Jack got hurt and you had a couple. And you have bad games sometimes, and they finished well. But it was the constant theme of you pissed away a big lead against Florida State because you took your foot off the gas. That's the only reason why. You got completely outcoached by Toledo. Completely outcoached by Toledo.
Yes.
You know, and honestly, I'd argue you got outcoached by Jeff Brohm when it comes to their defense against your offense.
Mm-hmm.
Like your defense, Freeman and them did a pretty good job against Jeff Brohm defensively. Really good job against that offense. But your offense had no answers for some things there. And again, took your foot off the gas. Virginia Tech, you got completely outcoached against Virginia Tech. You just had better players than they had. That's what it came down to. Right, there was no game that I look at that year, Sean, and I'm like, man, that was a great coaching job. Just a great coaching job. No, it's like you had way better players than that team. That's what it came down to.
Yeah. And for me, I think because I'm going to – what you just talked about, inexperience. Go back to 2016, right? What did they lose that year?
In 2016?
Yeah, they do. 2016 team was talented.
Yeah.
They were inexperienced, though.
Right.
And that was one of the big things, which goes to why Riley Leonard.
A lot of their experience just wasn't very good.
That could be said as well. But they lost a lot of games late.
Yeah.
You know, they had some young talent. Because that young talent was like Love and all of those guys, right? Julian Love, that was like the 16 young crew, or were they the next year? Yeah, 16 was like Julian Love and
well, you still had those guys on the 17 team. They were freshmen on that team. You're talking about like Kevin Stephenson was a freshman.
Yeah, they were freshmen. That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
Kevin was a freshman that year. Chase was a sophomore that year. I mean, just the entire 16, Javon McKinley, I'm trying to think of that, who that class was, but I mean, they were young that year, but it also came down to, they had an utter lack of leadership on that team. That to me mattered a lot more than the lack of youth.
And I think that is the strength of the inexperience you're talking about. That's probably a reason why Marcus Freeman says, yo, I got to go get me an experienced quarterback. Let me go get an experienced
coordinator.
Because I know I have a young, talented offensive line, right? And you have two. Well, yeah. I mean, look, Steve Angeli's been in the program. He hasn't had game experience, but the dude he can play college football.
I'm just going to say this, dude. If you want to try to be a Brian Kelly defender and defend jobs he's done, please, for the love of God, do better than 2021. Where they won zero games over teams that were ranked at the end of the year. Zero. Mm-hmm. Like 2020, that was a masterful coaching job. Brian Kelly did a phenomenal job coaching the 2012 team. Phenomenal job. Because they were way more talented in 2011. Way more.
Yeah.
So there are years you can point to where you can look at Brian Kelly and say, dude did a great job with those years. Can we not do that? Can we also be able to say, but there were times he did a bad job? 2011 was a bad job. 2012 was a great job. 2020 was a great job. 2021 was not a very good job. And do you know why I know it wasn't a great coaching job? Because what you and I know to be true, he was trying to get out the entire year.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want to be there anymore, which is why he left at the end of the year. So if you want to defend Brian Kelly and point the years where you thought he did a masterful coaching job, I'm with you. That was a – that 2020 was a – when you think about everything they had to overcome in 2020, are we even going to have a schedule to play? Like, all the offseason work they went into preparing for that 2020 schedule was thrown out the window because of COVID, because the whole schedule got canceled except for, like, four ACC teams, right? That was a brilliant job – truly brilliant job by Brian Kelly. going through the 2021 season and taking a team with a lot of NFL players and beating a bunch of mediocre football teams barely does not make it a great coaching job. That is a really poor argument, in my opinion. 2020, great coaching job. 2021, mediocre. Mediocre coaching job that year. So, no, nah, that's not that that argument's not going to fly here.
Would you agree? Like you said, this offensive line could stub their toe.
Sure.
But I would much rather have this coaching combination to coach them through that.
In 21?
Yes. Or last year, or versus last year. Like, give me Dembrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Rudolph this year to coach it too, because they need to be at the best going into the playoffs.
O line, I would have rather gone with the 2022 coaching staff than the 20. No disrespect to Jared Parker, but I would have rather gone with Tommy Rees and Harry Hiestand than Jared Parker and Joe Rudolph. But I have to pick between the three. I'm going to go with Joe Rudolph and Mike Dembrock.
Yeah,
and especially since Joe Rudolph's going into year two.
Yes.
Like, and even if it was Jared Parker and Joe Rudolph both coming back, I would still have more confidence that they're going to be able to get, because it would be both of their second years in those positions, right? But getting Mike Dembrock, who's proven to be able to build teams that can run the football, and Joe Rudolph, who, again, the question with Joe Rudolph is more, can he be great? He's a good coach.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, can he be great? That's a
conversation. I like his recruiting so far. Yeah. I do.
No doubt.
I like his
no
recruiting so far.
No doubt.
You know what? We didn't mention the twos in offensive line, did we? Because I know you said, look, for me,
as far as talking about guys need to get better.
Yeah, I would love to see guys push Pat Coogan. I would love to see some of these sophomores and redshirt freshmen push for those guard positions. I would love for them to get the opportunity to compete.
Sure.
And push those guys because they're talented, man. That's the one thing they didn't have. Look, they're a much deeper offensive line room, because what, that was just a year ago or 2 years ago, we had concerns about depth at tackle.
And like, still
do, right? And still trying to add that, you know. But I mean, when you're getting Gerby Lambert in, it's starting right in the 25
for
class.
2024.
Yeah.
There's still concerns this season.
Yeah.
Future's looking much brighter with Gerby, with Styles Prescott, mm-hmm. and then, of course, the entire 2025 O-line class.
Absolutely.
They can all
really
play
good.
Tackle. They can all play tackle. So, yeah, they're definitely getting there. Joe Rudolph is rebuilding, and he's rebuilding the right way in that they didn't force any bad fits. There were some kids they could have gotten past years that wouldn't necessarily be great fits at Notre Dame that maybe they could have got. Right. And that's the thing, is you weren't going to rebuild it in 1 year. It was that one class with Hiestand, because the before it was the interior, Sean. Mm-hmm. And that's what Hiestand's one class was built around. Here's what was going on in the O-line before Hiestand came back. And Rudolph is building on what Coach Hiestand started. That's what I'm excited about. He's not trying to shift direction. Let's build on it. They were small and they were soft. Yeah. I hate using that word. They just weren't a real powerful. It was about athletes and stuff like that. It wasn't like about power. There was a guy here, guy there, but they were undersized. Harry said, we got to get bigger and stronger. And his first class was all about size and power.
Right.
Every single kid, with the exception of Joe Otting, was huge. But Joe was tough. Right? Even though he was small, he was tough.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started doing that with the next year's class. Because remember, Harry was the one that got them going initially with Peter Jones. He committed to Harry.
Right.
And he's the one that got them going with Gerby Lambert and Styles Prescott. And then Coach Rudolph had to come in and
reestablish. Yeah.
In a way that was much different than the 19 class with Quinn, because it was so late that when Coach Hiestand left, that it was like, it was just, don't screw it up with those guys. This was different because you had to re-recruit Styles Prescott to a degree, but you really had to re-recruit Gerby Lambert.
Yeah,
like it was almost like start over from scratch, because that's the kind of prestige Coach Hiestand had. And props to Coach Rudolph for getting that done. Now this 25 class is fully 100% on him, and it's a bad year offensive line wise. And he went out and got three really good fits with really high ceilings. So and they're all physical kids. Even though Matty Augustine's a little undersized right now, or was when they started getting on him, he saw the frame, but he saw tough kids. He needed tackles. So Coach Hiestand really rebuilt the interior.
Yep.
Pendleton, Absher, Odding, all those kind of guys. Peter Jones. Now it's Coach Rudolph's job to build the perimeter, and so far he's done a really nice job of it in regard to how we project him. Now all these guys got to go prove themselves. These guys can develop and all that. But he's done a really nice job rebuilding the outside, which is what needed the attention, because Coach Hiestand did such a great job rebuilding that in his 1 year plus. Remember, it also helped that Tommy and Coach Hiestand were able to, especially Coach Reese, were able to finish off with Billy Shrouth. It wasn't even about Coach Hiestand. It was about Tommy. Yeah. When Quinn left, Tommy was able to then get Billy Shrouth, because Billy Shrouth wasn't going to come to Notre Dame if Jeff Quinn was at Notre Dame. That's just no disrespect to Coach Quinn, but it wasn't going to happen. And so that helped. And that class was huge too. That last, with all props to Jeff Quinn, his last class has provided a couple starters and as well. Ashton Craig is going to be part of that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Wagner, he recruited Emil Wagner. Mm-hmm. That's who recruited Emil Wagner. But those are the kind of guys he went out and got, though. Those undersized, got to build them up kind of guys, where Coach Hiestand said, we need some beef.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, Jagasaw shows up at 325. Absher shows up at 325. Pendleton shows up at 310. Tarek shows up at like 330. I mean, it's like he went and got some beef, man. He went out and got some beef.
So now you can, and that benefits you, man, because you can just lay on defenses physically. Mm-hmm. You can wear defenses down, not just with technique, play calling, long drives, but just physically. You get 330, 320, Ashton Craig is the pup as far as size on the offensive line at center. Man, it just looks different. It looks different. And for what we've seen, Brian, out of Jadarian Price early in camp, I'm looking forward to seeing him and Jeremiah Love behind this offensive line, especially as the season gets into the depths of it in November and the playoffs. I really do. I really do. So for me, I just look at the resume of offensive line and say, look, these young and experienced kids are going to become experienced, really good offensive line.
That's but I do think there's merit to the notion of that's why it was important to have Riley. And I've talked about this before.
Absolutely. Because
Riley can get you out of some trouble early on, where, hey, your offensive line didn't play well, but because he's this kind of athlete, kind of runner, scrambler, that he could kind of make something out of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And none of the guys they have on the roster, Steve, Kenny, or CJ, can do that.
Not to that degree. No.
Not even close to that degree. Like, not even close. So that's where, yeah, that's the biggest concern I have. But again, if you can get out of the A&M game with a win, I don't care if it's 3-0. Get out of that game with a win. Beating them on the road is the key. You're going to have a month to kind of get right.
Yes.
And that's going to be the key. With whoever you have a quarterback, it's going to be a chance to get that line right.
Mm-hmm.
And the receivers going. That's the key. You just got to get that opening win. That's the key. And then you're going to be coming. You're going to be a much different team when Louisville comes to town than you are when you go play A&M. That's right. Going to be the big key. All right, Sean, we're going to kind of a couple things. I see if there's a couple we might want to get to real quick. There's a lot of great questions, but there were so many questions that just got us going on long rants. I want to end with this one because we're not going to have time to get to all of them. We're already over 4 hours, and there's tons of great more questions. So what we're going to do, Sean? Tell you what, with a lot of y'all, we're not doing as many mailbags as we've been doing. Wednesday, Sean, are you able to do a show on Wednesday? Let's do a midweek mailbag on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. We're so many questions that we can't get to. We're not doing as many mailbags anymore afterwards, and I don't want to have people have to wait till next Monday since we didn't get to all these questions. So if you have questions, like there's one about my short-term, long-term goals, I appreciate all that, but we just don't have time to get to it today. We're going to do another midweek mailbag to kind of pay y'all back for all the questions we didn't get to today. But there is one I wanted to get to, Sean, which I think is going to be a great way to end the show. And I'm going to ask it because I want you to answer first. This is from John Leahy. I love this question. What are the top three reasons that you, Sean Davis, are excited about the 2024 season?
Coaching staff, quarterback room, speed at wide receiver.
Yeah. Those are good.
I mean, I could go on, but
I mean, because you only had to give three. Right. Those are good. I mean, I would have been more specific with the hires, the new hires. I would have probably zeroed in on, because you were turning some good coaches. But I think looking at it more bigger picture of the entire staff, it makes a ton of sense. I would look for the first time in a long time, Notre Dame can look and say, we've got arguably the best coordinator combination in college football. Where in the past Notre Dame's had really good defensive coordinators in the past and really good offensive coordinators in the past, but rarely have they had both in the same year.
Yeah.
And the one year that I thought they did was 2017 with Chip Long and Mike Elko. And that was a team that you were having to overcome the sting of a 4-8 season. So, and you had an incredibly tough schedule. Like I've said this before, the 10-3 from 2017 was way more impressive than the 11-2 or 11-1 from 2021 or the 11-2 of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Way more impressive because of the quality of the teams they played on a week to week basis. Clark Lee was and Chip Long were pretty good, but I was never quite as high on Clark Lee as some others. I thought he was a good coordinator, but I thought he was a little limiting. He was really good, but was he like big time? Could he produce elite defenses? I always kind of felt like they had a lot of talent when Clark Lee was here, if we're going to be honest about it. Like they had a lot of pros on those teams. And I felt at times I wanted to kind of turn it up a little bit. Like he was really good about, we're just going to line up and everybody knows to do their job and all that kind of stuff. But like when you got into certain games, when you needed to heat it up to make some stops in 19 and 18, he couldn't really do it, you know, against some of the better teams. And so that was kind of, I mean, I would argue that the most talented back-to-back years Notre Dame had on defense was the 18 and 19 teams. I mean, those teams were loaded with NFL guys. I mean, you had backups at D end in 2018 that got drafted. And you had a third stringer in 2018 that has started games and at defensive end that started games in the NFL in Jameer Jones. Like that's pretty flippin' awesome.
Yeah.
And Kurt Heine so let's think about it. The 18 team from the rotation. You had Julian got drafted, Dalen got drafted, Jameer Jones started games in the NFL, Khalid got drafted, Adi Takuba Ogundizi got drafted. Jerry Tillery got drafted. Kurt Heinisch is playing a lot for the Texans. That's 70 linemen that have either were drafted or have played a lot of snaps in the National Football League. You're starting Will linebacker as a starter on a team that's won a Super Bowl this year, right? You're starting boundary corner on that team is currently a pro bowler in the National Football League.
Mm-hmm.
You're starting field corner on that 18 team would be a player in the NFL right now if he didn't have a devastating knee injury in Troy Pride. One of your starting safeties on that team is a starting safety in the National Football League right now. And your other starting safety has been on an NFL roster for 3 or 4 years since he's played, Jalen Elliott. And then the 19 team had a freshman kid named Kyle Hamilton on that team. That was pretty good too.
Yeah.
You know, so like Clark Lee had a lot of NFL players, man. Like the talent on the 18 and 19 teams was better, in my opinion, than what Al Golden was working with last year, top to bottom.
Yeah.
I think they just did a better job of really getting the most out of this group. And so, again, Coach Lee was a good coach, but he wasn't an elite coach. Is Al Golden an elite coach? We'll see. But he certainly was last year,
yeah,
in my opinion. Right. I mean, let's see him string it together. Is Mike Denbrock proven himself to be an elite coordinator? I believe he has, because he's now done it at three different stops.
Yeah.
He did it at Notre Dame. He did it at Cincinnati. Did it at LSU. I mean, you know, so he's been proven. That's the coaching part for me, Sean, is it's the coordinators. We've had years where nobody in the business had a better online coach than Notre Dame, but do you have it here?
Yeah.
It's the coordinator thing. It's the fact that you have great teachers at the skill positions where you feel like you're going to get the most out of. I mean, think about it. Notre Dame has three of the best teachers in the game at running back, receiver, and corner. In my opinion, they're not elite recruiters that just have better players than everybody else. They're very good recruiters, but it's Mike Mickens is not taking bums and he's turning them into All-Americans.
Yeah.
He's recruiting, but he's getting the most out of these kids. Dylan McCullough is not, we're not excited about this year because Dylan McCullough is a great coach and he's going to turn these 4-7 kids into the best running back room in college football. It's dude has put some talent together mm-hmm. and there's a confidence that he's a good enough coach to also get the most out of them. It's that double combination. So I think you're right on that, Sean, from a coaching standpoint. Receivers for me is another one. You said quarterback depth. That one is probably why I'm optimistic about the floor. With Riley Leonard being hurt, I don't know that it's one of the three reasons I'm most excited about it. Here's what it boils down to. The third one for me is I believe that this team is the first Notre Dame team in a few years that has the athleticism to match up with anybody across the board. That's different about this team, even than last year's team, in my opinion, because of what you're going to have on the edge, what you're going to have at linebacker, what you're going to have. They're going to be more athletic at safety. I mean, we saw in last year at times when the lack of athleticism at that other safety spot was a problem. You may lack experience there now, but you don't lack athleticism. And so I think athletically, this team has got a chance to be special. I think the quarterback for me, Sean, and I'm curious your thoughts on that. The quarterback room for me, in as far as how you view it, is why I'm not concerned about this team falling off and going 8-4, 9-3, because I feel like any of them can lead them to 10 wins. I just feel like, can those other three lead them to a championship? I'm less optimistic about that. But if they are, it's going to be because the coaching, the skill players on, and I would even say not even receivers, the skill talent on offense, including the running backs, is as good as it's been in a long, because like that 15 team was special. CJ, Will, Chris, and Amir, but it kind of ended there because they didn't play Josh a whole lot until CJ got hurt, because it was never CJ and Josh. It was CJ, he got hurt, then Josh, and that's it. They didn't play them both together at all, really. And so, but after the three starters, you didn't have anybody. I mean, who else did you have in 18 at wide receiver, right? Or 15 at wide? I mean, yeah, Corey Robinson, he's pretty good. So I'll give, you know, but like at tight end, yet after Durham got hurt, it was Alizé and that was it. You know, where it's like now you don't have Mitchell Evans and you're still trotting out freaking Eli Raridan and Cooper Flanagan. You know what I mean? Like you lose Audric Estime and you're like, I love Audric. He was a stud. We're fine. I mean, think about, well, what if Jeremiah Love goes down? It sucks, but it'll be all right. Well, what if Jadarian Price goes down? All right, well, there's a lot of teams in college football that would love to go into a game with Jabron Payne, Kedron Young, and Aeneas Williams at running back. You know what I mean? A lot of teams on Notre Dame's schedule that would love to have that trio as their top three, and we're talking about Notre Dame needing to lose Audric and have two injuries to get to that trio. You know what I mean? It's the whole aspect of it. Man, well, what if Jaden Thomas gets hurt again? I hope it doesn't happen, but they're so much more prepared to handle that. Like last year when Jaden Thomas went down, it shook up the whole receiving core. Because when him and Deion got hurt, it was like, you got nobody else that can do what they do. Okay, now it's like you got Bo Collins, you got Micah Gilbert, you got Cam Williams. They can all do that. You know what I mean? And so it's a different animal than it was a year ago. And that's why you start getting excited about it, because it's like the margin for error is so much wider because of the athleticism and depth of athleticism they have.
And look, we go to the first practice and we're looking at each other like, yo, who is that? Like, oh, that's KK Smith. Like, okay, he's making plays. Like, you just talk about the depth they have at the position now. That's why I'm
– you're right. I mean, bring up KK. Logan, Bo Collins hasn't even showed up yet.
Hasn't shown up.
Jordan Faison's.
Is playing lacrosse.
Dude, Jeremiah Love could go line up a receiver if you needed him to. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just the depth of what. Oh, and by the way, their potential All American tight end's not there yet. Right? And so, what do you have? You have a couple 6'6 and 6'7 mountains playing the position this spring. Dude, and so, and you know what, though? Here's the thing.
Yeah.
You got to give a lot of credit to Tommy Rees for some of this.
Yeah,
because he played a role in a lot. I mean, Cam Williams, or you know, these guys are that, you know, a lot of this recruiting, Jeremiah Love, Jadarian Price, these are guys that he helped build, and then obviously they took it to another level in the last couple of years, right? Mm-hmm. And so you know, we're all excited about the quarterback room. Well, who recruited all those guys?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, Tommy Rees. I mean, so, you know, you got to give some love to some of the coaches of the past that have done a good job of recruiting and developing these guys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Lance Taylor and Tommy Rees actually was the one that recruited Logan Diggs, and Lance Taylor liked Audric Estime. You know, so but this staff has taken it to another level with the transfer guys. Mm-hmm. And that's where I said when the transfer portal opened up, I said, I don't like it. I hate it, but it's going to benefit Notre Dame. And imagine where Notre Dame would be right now if they didn't have Riley Leonard, Chris Mitchell, Bo Collins, or Jay. And we didn't even mention Jaden Harrison, who was a first-team All-American last year as a kick returner, and who is the fastest receiver they have, according to sources that I have.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's the thing. It's like the portal has helped Notre Dame. There's no doubt about it. What would we be thinking about Notre Dame's defensive line if they didn't have Javonte Jean-Baptiste last year? Yeah. Or R.J. Oben going into this year? Or Thomas mm-hmm. Harper in the slot last year?
Yeah.
The portal's been good to Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
It has been. They just don't do the volume that other people do. And that's helped kind of fill some of those little holes of where the past staffs have not done a good enough job.
Yeah.
Right? Because, like, past recruiting failures are why you needed those transfer receivers.
Yeah.
Right? And so they're just positioned talent-wise across the board where you're not make or break with the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where I'm at.
With that's a good feeling to have. Yeah.
And, you know, I think Al Golden kind of showed last year that, like, okay, he's capable of – but I've said even if the Al Golden's defense is the same as it was in 2022, this team still can win every game they play this year. Well, there's only one game they lost in 2021 because of the defense – 2022 because of the defense, and that was USC. No.
That was I exclude Brian Van Gorder. I don't even make him part of my conversations, but excluding him, the list of defensive coordinators that have come through Notre Dame.
It's been good.
If Clark Lee is the guy, you're like, okay, he's right. The least of the guys.
Right.
You're playing good. With house of money. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Because Elko was excellent his 1 year. Diaco was outstanding in his tenure. Marcus Freeman in mm-hmm. his 1 year. Al Golden, like I said, Al Golden in 2022, if you take that defense, again, let's think about what they did in their three losses before USC. Because I said they didn't play well enough against USC. They were without Cam Hart, without Tre Bracey, whatever. But they did still, end of the day, you're going to lose guys. You didn't play well enough.
Right.
They absolutely played well enough to beat Ohio State. Held Ohio State to 21 points mm-hmm. and barely 300 yards of offense. Absolutely played well enough to beat them on the road. Certainly played well enough to beat Marsh. You had one bad drive at the end of the game, but you held them to 19 offensive points. And you held Stanford to 16 points. You should have won all three of those games if you had a competent offense. So even though it wasn't a great defense, it was still a defense that was good enough to get you to 11-1 that year. Should have got you 11-1 that year, right? And then last year we saw kind of what they can do when they know the system better and he's got some players. I think the talent's going to – the physical God-given ability of this team is going to be better than last year's team. The question is, does he know how to get that same amount out of a team that doesn't have the knowledge of the defense the way last year's did? That's mm-hmm. my only question. But that means, are they closer to 2022 than they were last year from a execution standpoint? Okay, fine, but they're going to have better players than they had in 2022 mm-hmm. in a lot of places. So that's why there's just a level of, the defense is going to be pretty good. How good? Top 15 or top 5? But there's no doubt that they're going to be a top 15 defense, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives you a baseline to be kind of fired up about. So
I agree.
So we had like 27 questions we never got to and some others that we didn't star. So we appreciate you. We appreciate you guys. We'll do a midweek mailbag on Wednesday. Actually, no, hold Absolutely. On a second, Sean. We may have to. When's the next? Is the next practice Wednesday or Thursday? Let me just check.
I think it is Wednesday.
Okay. Let me just check that real quick because we are going to have practice access on, let me see here. Just give me 1 second. Pulling up the media, the practice schedule real fast. When did they send that out? They sent that. Here we go. It's going to be Wednesday, March 27th. So what we'll actually do is then we will do a practice report, then do nothing but mailbag after that. So that's what we'll do. Okay. So it's five periods. So practice report won't be that long.
No.
You know, so we'll do that. Then we'll dive into a mailbag on Wednesday. So bring those questions back. We appreciate y'all very much. Before you all leave, folks, hit that like button, hit the subscribe button, hit the notification bell, share this podcast. And if you've not done so, Sean, you watch the breakdowns. Guys, there's three videos that I did breaking down the Mike Denbrock offense, and there's several more to come. If you're not a member, I promise you, if you watch those videos, you'll be glad you signed up and you're going to want to be on board because it's really good stuff. People that are in the chat that have seen those videos that are on the board will tell you, I love the other people. You just don't get this anywhere else. You don't get this kind of analysis anywhere else not so humble opinion in that instance, but and I got some more run game and some pass game stuff coming. So definitely want to sign up for the message boards at boards.archbreakdown.com. For my man, Sean, I'm Brian. You all have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you again here very, very soon on the Irish Breakdown Podcast. We'll be right back.